You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
England come again with Mount's corner, and they come again. And would you believe it is Jordan Henderson to top off the night.
And Mayle, it's a delightful ball in, and it's a brilliant finish. Kasper Dolberg makes it two for Denmark.
And then there were four. The semi-final lineup is complete.
Yes, England rule in Rome to set up a clash with the 1992 winners.
Incredible. The Denmark fairy tale continues after they beat the Czech Republic.
We'll also look ahead to a cracking first semi-final between two old rivals.
Still going. Sees the chance.
What a
goal. Takes the chance. Brilliant. Brilliant from Insigne.
We off the ball. And Spanish eyes smile. Now they stare at Wembley Stadium and who knows what beyond.
Welcome to the show presented by Qatar Airways. I'm Rob Daly and I'm joined as always by her co-host Chris Parrott. Chris, the quarters are done.
Yeah, they're done and England are smiling. What a time, Rob, to record their biggest ever victory at any Euro. They are through to the semi-finals of another major tournament and quarterfinals, from their point of view, have rarely been easier or more straightforward. What a performance in Italy.
Joining Chris and I as well, we have the European football expert Andy Brassel, who's back from covering games in Budapest. Hi, Andy.
Hello, how are you?
Not bad at all, mate. And now we know that Denmark, they march on and they'll face England. What a great win for them.
Yeah, fantastic. And, you know, we like to see the different faces of teams as they go through the rounds and cope with different challenges. And well, goodness knows, Denmark have been through so many challenges in UEFA Euro 2020 already. But I thought they were very, very good in the first half. And in the second half, they had to put up with a lot of pressure from the Czech Republic and they withstood it. And now they're in the last four, and what a story it is.
OK, Chris, should we get to it?
Yeah,
all
why
right,
not?
All right, let's start with England, who took on Ukraine in Rome. And after a brilliant performance, they made it to their first Euro semi-final in 25 years.
Paprenko making a change. It'll come for Kane. Harry Kane in the fourth minute. And England are off to an absolute flyer.
Well, Raheem Sterling's been making them, so he's been scoring them and he's just made one.
I'm trying plenty of movement, as Shaw delivers, and Harry Maguire. It's another Harry. It's another goal for England at the start of a half. Sterling, Shaw is going to set up another one. He has done. Kane again. He's got two, England have got three. And they're running riot in Rome. But England come again with Mount's corner, and they come again. And they score, and would you believe, it is Jordan Henderson to top off the night with his first England goal. Denmark await at Wembley next Wednesday. Ukraine 0, England 4.
What a comprehensive win. And interestingly, on social media, and you can get in touch with us on Twitter using the hashtag EuroShowChris, England fans were saying that knockout tournament football for the national team never looks comfortable.
No.
And this has felt a little bit unusual what they've seen in Rome.
Well, I mean, England's entire history is, let's be honest, apart from the FIFA World Cup win in 1966, is about near misses and heartbreaking defeats. But it hasn't been, really, ever since Gareth Southgate has taken over, who has now led England to two major semi-finals in 3 years. And, of course, before the 2018 FIFA World Cup last four appearance, their last semi-final was Euro 96. So these are, I mean, almost in many England fans' lifetime, unprecedented times. Now, whether they can go all the way is, of course, a discussion for later, and we won't know for maybe 10 days. But, wow, that was a statement performance. And as Andy said about Denmark, when you want to see sides evolving, progressing throughout a tournament, I think you're seeing that with England. I really do.
Let's get into some of the team news then ahead of this game, because England made changes. Trippier came out. England switched to a back four. They had played with three centre-backs in the previous round against Germany. Jadon Sancho surprisingly came in, and Mason Mount returned after his period of isolation, largely away from the group. Saka, due to a knock, did not feature. Malinovsky was injured.
Yeah.
Thigh injury, Chris, we think, yeah. And he did not feature for Ukraine, who stuck with the system that saw them beat Sweden. But Andy, perfect start and more magic from Raheem Sterling to set up that goal for Kane.
That's right. And something that Sterling has done so consistently well. Of course, we focus on the goals so far, and especially when England were edging teams in the group stage games, I think that's completely normal and they were vital goals. But something that he's very good at doing is drifting into central areas and running at teams. I think it makes a huge difference, especially in terms of opening teams up, because there's not a lot of natural width in this England side, apart from Jadon Sancho, who came in tonight, just as there wasn't in France, as there wasn't in the Portuguese team. And it's the case with a lot of the best teams in this tournament. So for Sterling to find space or create space in a congested central area is something he's done brilliantly. And he did that again. And we can just see that confidence absolutely flying through Harry Kane. Now, he's someone who always backs himself. We know that. We know he wants to play himself into form. He never hides. But when you got to that point in the second half, when Buschan made that really great save from him off the volley, the moment that could have been the hat trick, that just showed that Harry Kane is really feeling it now.
And I think he said when they were in the English press, and I think amongst some England fans when he hadn't scored in the first game or so, people were saying, well, how is he? And he said, don't worry, I'm going to peak at just the right time. Well, I mean, he's staying true to his word from an English point of view, isn't he? And you know, I think again, we saw how much those two players enjoy playing together as well, Sterling and Kane. And they're not club teammates, of course. One plays at Tottenham, one plays at Manchester City. But also, Rob, you mentioned a fast start in the first half. Well, you know, Ukraine just had a little spell just before half-time when they had a couple of half-chances, and then England came flying out in the second period. And I think that goal from Harry Maguire to make it 2-0, that was probably the moment when it was game over.
Let's hear from him now, Harry Maguire.
No, it's a great feeling. Back-to-back semi-finals at a major tournament is a great achievement, but like, I don't want to be a party pooper, but we don't stop here. We've got another big game coming up, and we want to go further this time than we did at the World Cup. So, no, of course, it's a great feeling to win here, and the way that we've done it as well shows the big progress that we're making as a country. So, no, long may the improvement continue, and like I say, we've got another big one coming up.
Two Harrys on the score sheet for England in their win in Rome. And what's impressed me, Andy, most of all about Maguire, because he was out for 44 days after that injury with United, Chris, of course, is that he hasn't taken any time to get up to speed, just instantly up to speed as soon as he was back in the team at the end of the group stage, and you know, a real force at both ends of the pitch.
Yeah, and it's a real sign of a top-class performer in any sense, but certainly a top-class defender. And we've seen it, I guess, with Thiago Silva before, the fact that he's someone who can go without playing or training for a while if he's been injured and then come straight back in to the team, pick it up without missing a beat. And we're seeing that from Maguire as well. It's something pretty special. And I think the way that Gareth Southgate is set up has helped that as well. The way that England play, the tempo at which England have played throughout this tournament, it allows Maguire to get comfortable a bit on the ball. And I think that's really helped him too.
Yeah, look, I cover Manchester United a lot, and Luke Shaw, particularly in the second half of the season for Manchester United, was, if not their best player, probably one of their top two players, maybe alongside Bruno Fernandes. He was unbelievably good for them. So I'm not surprised that he got the nod, and I'm not now surprised that he is performing for England the same way that he has performed for his club for definitely the last 6 months, probably actually the last 12 months as well. He was unbelievably good, right? And you see that the link-up he has. We know he's a good defender, but I think we're now seeing him in the final third being really, really dangerous as well.
He made one for Harry Kane. Let's hear from the man who got two goals at the Stadio Olimpico.
Yeah, no, great performance, great night. It's a quarter-final in a European Championship. To perform like we did and win in the manner we did, another clean sheet. Great day for English football. Yeah, I mean, I've said it all along, it's all about peaking for the right times, peaking for the knockout stage. And yeah, I feel good. I feel ready. Obviously, Rez put a great ball in a few minutes into the game, and I was able to put it away. And then second half, we come out with real determination. So yeah, of course, it's nice to score a couple of goals. But the most important thing is that we're winning games. So let's keep it going.
Harry Kane there. Chris is frantically waving at me, which means he's very excited about a stat.
Yeah, I know. Well, look, some stats you can't take too much notice of. This one is pretty good. He's now level with Alan Shearer for the most major tournament goals for England. Only Gary Lineker has more. So he's on 9. So Harry Kane will be eyeing up that, I think. And if he does get one more, who knows? He might just be the England guy who lifts the trophy. A long way to go, and I like that. I think this group of players have consistently now, in the World Cup in 2018, when they reached the semi-finals, and here at Euro 2020, that they are, no one is getting ahead of themselves. They know they've got an almighty challenge coming up now.
We saw Ukraine's fight against Sweden, Andy, of course, in the round of 16, with that incredible 121st minute winner from Dovpik to get them through to the next round. Do you think, was it, you know, that quick fire double after half time, did that just sort of knock the stuffing in any plan that maybe Andrei Shevchenko had tried to implement at half time?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right, Robin. We all saw the reaction of Shevchenko on the touchline when that Harry Maguire goal went in. It was very well executed from an England point of view, but from a Ukraine point of view, the coach will have found that absolutely infuriating that they conceded a set piece goal before his team had barely put a minute into the second half, which is tough for them. I feel that the Malinovsky injury, as Chris pointed out before, is huge for them. I think for him to take centre stage in a match back in Italy would have been a big thing for them, especially with the way he ended the season. Never really quite found his range in this tournament. And it's very hard to criticise players for that because, of course, they've all had very long, very difficult seasons. But I felt that Ukraine really missed that extra bit of clarity in attacking possession in the final third. And, you know, once those two England goals had gone in, it was a formality. But the appetite that England showed once they've got goals two and three, there was just no let up. Ukraine had no window to get back into the game at all. And that's huge credit to Gareth Southgate and England.
Just on one of my monitors, by the way, we're seeing a compilation of Jadon Sancho running with the ball. Mm. Even his work, I mean, it was superb. He won the ball for the goal for 3-0. He was outstanding for England and like Italy and Spain and Denmark, all the semi-finalists. Faith in the full squad from the respective head coaches. OK, shall we hear from some fans then?
Are they going to be happy?
I think they might be. Lindsay Hooper's on the ground, of course, at the UEFA Football Village in London. And it's been a lively night.
The final whistle has gone in the England-Ukraine match. 4-0 winners. Lee, did you expect that result?
Never in a million years. We was playing well the last game, but this one is something else above and beyond. Can't believe it.
What do you think it was that got the firepower going?
Harry Kane's on form. Simple as that. Feed him the ball and he will score every time. He's brilliant.
How long have you been watching England, Lee?
Oh, well, I'm 51, so all my life, as long as I can remember.
So you know about hope and expectation. So many
times we come close, but always been let down. But this time, 100% we're going to do it. We're going to go all the way, 100%.
All the way?
All the way to the final and win it.
Lindsay Hooper on the ground. It's the great thing about hearing the fans, and we've heard from Lindsay throughout the group stages, you also get into the psyche of supporters. So you hear like the very confident Italians, the Spanish, a bit more pragmatic, and then you can hear the frailty of an England fan, but then suddenly the optimism as well that goes with it.
I was just going to say, though, I think this is something that Gareth Southgate has managed to change since he's gone in. I don't think at the World Cup that people were that confident going into the semi-final. I think whatever happens, I think he has successfully changed the psyche of a lot of England fans, that now knockout football is not something to be afraid of. You see that from his team, the way they play, and I think he's starting to prove to a whole nation, a whole new generation, even guys who are in their 50s like Lee there, that there's nothing to be afraid of in these big tournaments anymore.
So England will face Denmark in the semi-final after Kasper Hjulmand's side beat the Czech Republic at the Baku Olympic Stadium.
Christensen now on the toes of the goalkeeper. And it has come to Delaney, who has put Denmark in front. Fabulous header from Thomas Delaney.
Oh, what a start that is.
Now Mayle, it's a delightful ball in. It is a brilliant finish. Kasper Dolberg makes it 2 for Denmark. But it was all about the setup then. It was a fantastic cross in. And this time Schmeichel's beaten. And Patrick Schick has claimed another goal. It really is game on now.
Oh, your heart has to be in your mouth now, if you're Danish.
Well, the adventure continues for Denmark. The fairy story continues. In Baku, it's finished. The Czech Republic 1, Denmark 2.
Certainly did. It is their first semi-final of the competition since they won it, surprisingly, back in 1992. And Andy, again, a very strong start really is what got Denmark into the last four.
Yeah, it made a huge difference. And I know the first goal looked pretty straightforward. It was a good header by Delaney from the delivery. But I think it shows how well-drilled and well-coached Denmark are. The way that the block by Kjær created the space for Delaney to score that goal. And then Mæhle and his cross in for Dolberg in the second goal. And Dolberg, who's had a difficult couple of seasons at Nice, where there have been moments where he's absolutely flown and looked brilliant, and others where he's struggled a little bit. For him to come into this tournament after not being first choice at the beginning and start to score some really important goals, again, it shows that it's the example of the best coaches in this competition. And we've seen it with Southgate, we've seen it with Mancini. These coaches who can make everyone feel involved so that when a player comes in, having not been first choice, they're immediately ready. And that's absolutely vital.
We'll hear from Joachim Mæhle in a moment. Defender Jens Streicher-Larsen also spoke to us on the pitch after the match.
Unbelievable. What a performance today. What a game. Before we start the competition, we had a dream about going to the semi-final at Wembley. Now when we're here, it's even more unbelievable that we achieved that. So we are so happy now in the dressing room. Yeah, we make history that we achieved the semi-final now. It's been many, many years ago since Denmark were there.
Yeah, it means everything to us. Not only us, but also for the country of Denmark. It's been amazing with the support we can see today. Our supporters were the only supporters we could hear throughout the whole game. It's been an amazing journey for us after losing the first two games. So I'm just really proud of the boys. Even though we're going to take all the belief, all this confidence we have in the team, and then we are dreaming and going to Wembley.
Streicher-Larsen and Mæhle, part of an unchanged Denmark side. As Andy mentioned, Dolberg getting the nod again. He barely celebrates when he scores, does he? It's very unusual, but he just looks very comfortable when he does so. OK, let's talk to a man who knows what it's like to play for Denmark in a European Championship. The former Denmark and AC Milan defender Martin Larsen joins us now. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Martin.
My pleasure.
You must be buzzing after that win for Denmark. What a result. Great celebrations and a famous victory to make the semi-finals.
Yeah, it was a good performance, but not the best. Obviously, we played a pretty good first half, scored two great goals. The second one was exceptional. And then, they scored a goal they could have scored just before as well. But again, I think we defended well. It wasn't like they had some clear opportunities in the second half, but still it was nervous. But we won, and we're very happy for the boys, and the whole Denmark is excited.
I bet it is. First time through to a major tournament semi-final since Denmark won Euro 1992. This must be one of the biggest victories in Denmark's history in many ways.
To be among the last four in the European Championship is great. But I also think that this team is one of the best we've had for many, many, many years. We had some great expectations for the team before. When you look at the players, where they play, the recent results, It's been very, very good. And then we all know about with Christian Eriksen that it was very sad. But he's fine now, and it created more energy. And the whole Denmark is more united towards the football team now and really supporting. And the players can feel that. And it is a great motivation. I know from myself that you need some kind of motivation. And when you can feel that the whole Denmark is very proud of the players, the way they handled the whole situation and everything, it creates energy, and the players have used that.
What I liked about this Denmark team going into the tournament, Martin, was you knew the quality they had in Yusuf Poulsen and Pierre-Emile Højbjerg and Simon Kjær and Kasper Schmeichel and Christian Eriksen, of course. But at the tournament as well, we've seen these other players come to the fore, like Mæhle playing at fullback, great assist in the game. Mikael Damsgaard, who's come in for Eriksen. How surprised have you been by their performances at this tournament, many making a name for themselves across Europe?
Joachim Mæhle is I'm very surprised. I knew him before, but the way he has played in these games is incredible. I mean, he's got a lot of quality, but the way he runs up and down the whole match, scored some great goals so far. Mikkel Damsgaard is playing because Christian Eriksen, you know, is not playing. And he scored a great goal and has really played well. But you can mention a lot of players that has really stepped up in this tournament, and the way the coach put in new players and they play well, it's great for everyone. It's not only important who starts the game, it's also important who finishes the game, and everyone has made their contribute.
Presumably this group of players isn't going to fear anybody.
Playing England in Wembley will be very difficult. To play England anywhere is difficult, but when they play at home, we know from the three games that we played at home that it is something that is good for the team to play at home. So it will be difficult, but I mean the team has quality, and on a good day we believe that we can beat eventually England in a semi-final.
Do you look at this team playing and the excitement and the shirts have been sold out and think, oh, I so wish I was part of that? Is there any part of you then when you're watching the team like this?
Well, obviously, I enjoyed every minute when I played for Denmark, but that's a long time ago. You can sit and watch an Aston Villa game at Villa Park, or watch Denmark in TV or in Parken, and think that it would be nice, yeah, to be there because you've experienced it on your own body, so you know how great a feeling it is. But that was then. Now I'm here. I have played, but obviously it is a great feeling, and everybody should try and feel how it is to play for your country.
We can enjoy it like a fan, like the rest of us, and none of us have played for our country. So you've got that, Martin. Thank you so much for your company. It's been a pleasure.
Pleasure. Thank you.
The former Denmark and AC Milan defender Martin Larsson. Well, let's switch things up and talk about the Czechs, who've had this fantastic run. First of all, let's hear from their goal scorer and a man who currently, Chris, joint top scorer, isn't he? Five goals.
He is.
With Ronaldo. Let's hear from Patrick Schick.
We started very good second half. We wanted to make early goal, but in the end, we missed the power in the end. We didn't find any solution. We lost the game. The difference was in the first half. I believe if we don't concede two goals, we could win the game. But yeah, it's that's football. It's about mistakes. We did some, and we are out. If we look back, we deserve a big respect because not too many people believe in us, and we showed that we can play also against the biggest teams. I'm proud for what we did. Was successful from us.
Shame that we're not going to see any more of Patrick Schick, really. He's been fantastic at Euro 2020. The Czech Republic have had a great run, of course. So before we say goodbye to them, let's get a Czech legend on the show. The former Liverpool midfielder Vladimír Smica joins us now from Prague. Hi there, Vladimír.
Hi.
I guess huge disappointment. Did you think after that second half comeback that Czech Republic might force extra time?
Of course, I think second half we came back strong, and we scored early goal that gave us a little bit, hope. Maybe come back to the game completely and maybe have a draw and play the extra time. But unfortunately, we started badly. We started conceding a goal after set pieces, after first score. And after first corner, it's a little bit disappointment because it's easy. You don't want to concede a goal from set pieces, in the game like this. And after 5 minutes and the second goal, then 2-0 down. We didn't play that really bad, but 2-0 down, it's already difficult mission, to come back. But the first goal we scored, it gave us a hope. But at the end, we were a little bit short, and maybe Denmark deservedly went through.
What are your thoughts on the run itself, Vladimír? Because there was a win over the Scotland with the halfway line goal, the draw with Croatia with that Schick penalty, the narrow loss to England, and then the famous win over the Dutch in the round of 16. It's been a great route to the last eight.
That was a good run for the Czech team. We were a little bit underestimated. The players, they had motivation and they wanted to show that they are a good team, good players. And at the end of the day, I think they did maximum what they probably could do. I think it was good run for us, and quarter final is fantastic results for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Vladimír, you had a great goal scoring record for the Czech Republic as a player. Can we talk a bit about Patrick Schick, who is the joint top scorer at Euro 2020? He's been unbelievably good, hasn't he?
He is, he's got great talent. Quite often he's injured, So if he can stay a little bit more fit in the season, through the season, maybe two, three seasons, then his performances will be consistently well, or he'll be doing well consistently. That's what he is missing a little bit, the consistency in his club career. But for the national team, he's number one striker, and he showed that at this European Championship, and he's the guy that he'd be, I think, next few more years, number one striker at Czech Republic. He can score lovely goals. I think in his career, he scored a lot of goals. And when he scores, it's usually a nice goal.
Now only he and Milan Baroš have scored more goals at Euro than you, Vladimir, for the Czech national team. I hope you forgive us. Do you mind reflecting a little bit on Euro 96? We're in England and there's been loads of nostalgia around the tournament. Of course, your Czech Republic team reached the final. Couple of questions. First of all, can you talk to us a little bit about the lead up to the final? You had stitches in your head. You went away to get married before the final. I'm sure you've told this story a million times, but could you tell us again how you got married between a semi-final and a final of a Euro?
This story was like before the tournament, I decided with my now wife that we will get the marriage. And I said, hey, let's do it at the end of June because... you know, in our group was Italy, Germany, and Russia, and I don't think
it's a tough group. Yeah,
we will go through, and we did, and I scored a decisive goal against Russia and egalized on 3-3 that put us through the quarterfinal, and then I went to see before the semifinal game. I went to see the coach, and I tell him, Gaffa, you know, I have a little bit problem. Because I supposed to have a marriage on Friday and France game was on Saturday, on Wednesday, a semi-final, and probably Sunday was the final. And so I went to see him after the winning quarterfinal game against Portugal. And I asked him if I can go to the Prague to have a marriage and come back on Friday evening. And he said, bloody, if we beat France, you can do whatever you want.
Brilliant.
It was a great story. It was a great story. And my marriage in Prague was unbelievable. It was, I don't know, 10,000 people there waiting for me. Wow. at the place. You know, it was special. It was really good.
And then you went back to join up with that great team, including another future Liverpool player in Patrick Berger and Karol Poborski, who ended up at Manchester United, of course. Pavel Nedved as well in that final. You lost to Germany eventually in extra time. What are your memories of the game? Can you actually remember much of it itself, or is it all, you know, you see it back in footage and that's how you remember it?
Yeah, I remember that we played well this game. You know, we played Germany in the as the first game in our group, and we lost 2-0 at Old Trafford. And we didn't play well. We really were bad. And and then we said, okay, we can't play. We can play only better than we played them at the group, in the group. And so in the final, we scored a goal. And I think we quite, I don't want to say controlled the game, but we were not in the big troubles. Unfortunately, then Bierhoff, I think Bertie Fox was the coach. He put on the Bierhoff and... and he egalized, I think, 15 minutes before the end. And then at extra time, he scored a winning goal, lucky winning goal, because it was double touch or double deflection on his shot. And he scored a winning goal. It was golden goal, unfortunately, for us. And we lost the final. It was pity. But we were disappointed that we wanted to play England, you know, in the final. We were supporting England against Germany at the semis, at semi-final. We wanted to play England at Wembley at home. You know, it would have been a fantastic game. Unfortunately, we played Germany and we lost Germany again. So, you know, a little bit is a big disappointment. But it was, at the end of the day, it was for us great stuff for our career. As you mentioned, for me, for Pavel Nedved, yeah. Karol Poborski, Patrick Berger signed to Liverpool, Nedved signed to Lazio, Radek Babel signed to Atletico Madrid. It was Poborski to Manchester United. It was really great start for our generation, you know. Then for the next few years, our generation, we played all together and we had a great team.
You certainly did. And it was an absolute thrill to watch you at Euro 96 and in subsequent tournaments. Vladimir Smica, thank you very much for coming on.
Oh, no problem, guys. Thank you very much for the invitation and enjoy the final games at Euro.
Vladimir Smica there. Top insight, and let's be honest, Rob, the Czech Republic, one of those teams to really, really impress at Euro 2020.
Can you even imagine how good that wedding was? I mean, dearie me. Vladimir,
did he say 10,000 people?
He did, yeah.
That's expensive.
Okay, well, let's get some more fan reaction then. Lindsay Hooper's been in the UEFA Football Village in London for us.
In a sea of England fans at the fan zone in Trafalgar Square, there was one table with some Denmark shirts, and I found Nana, and you were just fist pumping because you've seen your team make it through to the semi-finals.
Oh my God, it's amazing. I'm so happy. I was saying at the end my heart rate was so high because I felt like our energy got a bit down at the end, but at this table we definitely kept our energy up, and even my English boyfriend was really got into it as well, so I definitely felt supported around here.
Well, they'll be divided next week. week because England played Denmark. Yeah, Andy Brassel with Chris Parrott and myself, Rob Daly. Andy, what do you reckon then? Denmark-England in the semi-final?
Yes, it's going to be fantastic. And I guess when we're talking about Euro 96 nostalgia and a little bit more of it there, speaking to Vladimir Smitsa, I guess there will be people thinking it's a shame that the Czechs didn't make it back to Wembley. But, you know, Denmark, it's an incredible story. They've had some incredible stories already in the Euros, as Chris was saying earlier in the show, going back to Euro 92. And they've come such a long way. We talked about England growing into the tournament. I feel that Denmark are doing that more and more now. It was a more confident display in the last game of the groups against Russia, then more so against Wales, where maybe the 4-0 score flattered them a little bit and was harsh on Wales, but I think it was really a sign of Denmark's ruthlessness. And then we saw that again today in the way in which they closed the game out. So, of course, England are favourites, but it's a huge task for them.
It definitely is. And Andy, if you look back to the UEFA Nations League in October, Denmark beat England at Wembley by a 2-0 in the match where Harry Maguire was sent off in normal time and Reece James was then dismissed after full time. And they also drew 0-0 at Parken in September. So in very recent memory, with very similar squads, Denmark have had the better of England.
I think that's it, Chris. You look at Denmark before the tournament, and you know, we never could have known what happened for them or any other team during the tournament because there have been so many twists and turns. But what's, I think, so impressive about Denmark and what made them a dark horse for quite a few people coming into this tournament is the fact that they've got a very, very consistent, credible spine. And we've seen those players. We know what we're going to get from Schmeichel, Kjær, Delaney, who didn't have a great season at club level but has really shown up in this tournament, I think. But I think you look at Christensen, who the way he has improved under Thomas Tuchel in the first six months of this year, this calendar year, under Thomas Tuchel at Chelsea, has been a huge advantage to Denmark and Kasper Hjulmand as well. And, you know, there are players who are visibly growing into this tournament.
OK, plenty more to come as we preview the other semi-final.
You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
So it is England versus Denmark on Wednesday, the 7th of July. Chris, the day before.
Yeah, the day before. How about this? At 2100 CEST, Italy against Spain. That is going to be a cracker. And I think worth remembering and mentioning again, Rob, that more than 60,000 fans are going to be committed to attend both semi-finals at Wembley. So there are going to be more supporters at England's home than there have been during this tournament. And we've seen what a great atmosphere there was with, what, 40-odd thousand for England-Germany. I think the noise is going to be pretty special for these two enormous games.
Yeah, and Andy, you were at the games in Budapest, obviously, in the group stage where you had the big crowds.
It makes an enormous difference. And I think we saw with Hungary's performances in those two games that they played in Budapest, where they were unlucky to lose the thread a little bit towards the end of the Portugal game, and then they pushed the world champions all the way, you could just see the players being visibly lifted by that. So what that'll do for these teams in a semi-final context, it should be something really special.
Well, they did meet in the 2012 final, and it was the Spanish who came out on top.
Iniesta looking for Fabregas. That's a decent looking pass as well. Fabregas for David Silva, and David Silva scores the first goal in this final. Alba's got a lot of space to move into, and he has scored Spain's second. And this is Fernando Torres, and Torres has pretty much ensured that Spain will be the European champions again. Here is Torres, and Torres has given it to Mata, and Spain now have four. They are already starting the party in the stands, and now the party can start on the pitch as well. Spain have reclaimed their trophy, and in style too.
They certainly did. So how are Italy feeling ahead of this huge semi-final? Well, our UEFA reporter Paolo Minacucci, Chris, has been with the team.
Yeah, he has, and he's been fantastic throughout this tournament. He was in Munich, Rob, on Friday for that impressive win against Belgium. And he's in Florence now, busy man. Ciao, Paolo.
Hello, everyone.
So you've been as busy as the team travelling back from Munich to Italy. First of all, have you recovered from that superb quarter-final victory?
What a game. I'm still all excited. It was very, very good football. And
great victory for Italy. One of the best Italy game I remember, actually.
Paolo, looking at your snippets of the Italian papers, the reaction as well from the win, there's so much positivity around the group, praise for the likes of Barella, Insigne, Donnarumma and Chiellini in particular. So what is the mood ahead of facing Spain and the thoughts ahead of facing Spain in the semi-finals?
Spain has always been a tough rival for Italy. Like this is the fourth consecutive European Championship that Italy are facing Spain. And there is, of course, the bad memory of the 2012 final when Spain won 4-0. There was a revenge five years ago with Conte when Italy defeated Spain in the round of 16. But I mean, even this is a different Spain. It's not the Spain of Xavi, Iniesta and all the other great champions. But still, there is a lot of respect for them. And you could notice even I was in Munich and they were showing some action of the other quarterfinals, Spain against Switzerland. And when Switzerland equalized, everyone in the stadium was celebrating because they wanted to avoid Spain, actually.
And just finally, Paolo, the movements of the Italy team now. Am I right in saying they're carrying on training in Florence and then just heading to London for the day before this semi-final?
Yeah, absolutely. They will not train in Wembley. They will likely, this is to be confirmed, they will likely train here in Coverciano and then leave immediately for London after the training in the morning.
Paolo, you've been making us all very jealous with all the food you've been eating across Italy. So now you're coming to England.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about the cuisine? Do you need any tips? What do you reckon?
First of all, I can tell you that we took a bit of a break here because it's 30 degrees. It's too hot for really eating that food that we were eating in the beginning of the tournament. But here we have a solution for every problem. So fantastic ice cream all the time.
Of course. Yes.
Gelato for everyone. London, what kind of tips can you give?
I don't know,
me,
like, he's got to go fish and chips in here at some point. Do you think
he could go for a curry perhaps in the East End of London as well? That would be quite traditional, Paolo.
Yeah, 99 and a flake. That's your ice cream. That's our equivalent.
I'm taking notes, huh?
Good man, you're learning from the very best. Paolo, enjoy the food, enjoy the semi-final. We'll speak to you soon.
Speak to you soon.
Paolo Menicucci, our reporter with Italy. I'm worried he's going to think badly of our food. Posting it on the match centre. 2 out of 10, not very good. Eating loads of different meals. But we'll surely hear from Paolo on another edition of the show. Chris, of course, there's the injury to Spinazzola. We should get Andy's opinion on it, maybe.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we got the news today, unfortunately, that it is quite a bad Achilles problem, Andy. And for one of the stars of Euro 2020, that is a huge blow for him personally. And for Italy, for the semi-final, that's massive, right? That he's not going to be there.
Yeah, he's a huge part of Italy playing on the front foot. He's irreplaceable. I don't think there's any doubt about that. The link with Insigne, it was absolutely fantastic throughout this tournament. And I think if you go back through Spinazzola's career, he has a history of stepping up in big games, despite the fact that injury has held him back at times. You think of, you know, that Cristiano Ronaldo-inspired comeback of Juventus against Atletico Madrid in the Champions League the year before last. Spinazzola was absolutely immense in that before he left Turin for Rome. So he will be really missed.
OK, well, let's switch attention to Spain and speak to our reporter with the team, Graham Hunter. Hi, Graham. Another nervy win for Spain the other day. How do you feel about the way they're playing at the moment?
I honestly believe that there are two big aspects to this. One, game management is always important, but it comes under the spotlight when you don't score chances. Because when you create as many chances as Spain did in each of those games, if you think about the way in which Olmo was set bare for 4-1 against Croatia in the dying minutes, and if you look at the way in which a plethora of chances were wasted against Switzerland, over and above how well some were played, there were opportunities to leave the Swiss goalie helpless. That brings match management back into a different kind of focus. It doesn't mean that it isn't important, and it does mean that the great teams have a match so strangled, so asphyxiated, that if you happen to be missing chances, your one goal lead is enough. Let me think who that used to be. Ah, yes. Spain of Xabi Alonso and Xabi and Iniesta and Torres and Villa and Puyol and Ramos. That used to be the case, that whether you were scoring or not, if you had a goal, it was enough. So that's not the truth. That's not true of this group. And the other half of the way to look at it, I think, is that you don't need my opinion anymore. Luis Enrique was really good about this. He specifically said, it's not the way we defended. It's the way we used the ball in that last 10 minutes. And I take him to mean, Rob, that instead of controlling the game with the ball further up the field and making Croatia chase it,
yeah,
Spain's players, and you mentioned youth, they just wanted, it was the exuberance of playground football. Let's have another charge. Lads. Come on, whoa, this is fun. God, I love football. Oh, it's 3-3. And the whole dash thing would be irrelevant if they would just took away a higher percentage of their chances.
But they managed to win, Graham, and it sees them into a semi-final with Italy. And personally, it makes me think of 2012 and the final, of course, when Spain beat them 4-0. I'll never forget Iker Casillas. The game's nearly done, and he tells Pedro Proença, look, blow the full-time whistle, the game's done, it's 4-0. Almost an act of sportsmanship, really. Obviously, you were there, so your thoughts on 2012 and that game in Kiev, what are your fondest memories of that?
In 2012, it had become, yeah, this is what we do. There was such a calm, no raucousness. It literally was, it reeked of, we came here to win, we've won, great, super, well done, everybody. But the uplifting part was the families. There were kids skipping and gambling everywhere, not knowing that their dads were semi-geniuses. Wives and girlfriends had family responsibility for several weeks. Now we're in the dressing room with, you know, their partners and friends of their partners. And Vincente Del Bosque's son was born with Down syndrome, and he adores his dad and he adores Spain. He's probably Spain's most fervent fan. And to watch the players treated Vicente Del Bosque's son with more affection and attention than they treated the trophy. They were all around him. They were taking pictures with him. They were teasing him. He was hugging them. It was outstanding. Genuinely, because I've never seen them and him at close quarters together. It was fantastic.
Extraordinary. It must have been a very special few days for a very special Spain team and yourself, Graham. Look, enjoy the semi-final, and hopefully we'll be catching up with you after the game at Wembley. It should be a cracker.
Let's see. It will be a cracker. I think that Spain start second favourites. It doesn't rule out the idea that they might do it, but I think Spain are just a little bit on the edge of their territory at the moment. So, football being what it is, who the heck knows? Look forward to seeing it at Wembley.
Certainly do. Graham, thank you.
Cheers, Rob.
UEFA Spain correspondent Graham Hunter there. Andy Brassel with us on the show. What do you reckon? Who's coming through this one, do you think?
Italy. I think there was a headline in one of the Portuguese newspapers today, and they're quite circumspect normally about non-Portuguese teams. And it just said in our jogo, this Italy are irresistible. And I think that's very difficult to disagree with.
Sarabia is an injury concern at the moment for Spain. He's featured relatively heavily. They've been careful with Aymeric Laporte as well. He's played every minute along with goalkeeper hero Unai Simon from the penalty shootout. OK, should we put our necks on the line then? I mean, yeah, we've got the semi-finals in a few days. Who's going to win it?
I think, given what Andy's just said, he might agree with me. But I still have, despite England's very impressive performance against Ukraine, I would still make Italy favourites to be at Wembley twice and ultimately to lift the trophy.
There's not much in it between Italy and England for me. And of course, that's presuming almost that Italy are coming through that semi-final. What do you reckon, Andy?
Spain and Denmark fans are going to be quite annoyed and they'll have every right to be. I think England-Italy final and Italy by a whisker.
Oh, we've all gone Italy.
I'll go England then. Why not? Okay. Look, Andy, been great to have your company. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Chris, mate, great stuff.
Yeah, what a performance. And what a semi-final lineup we have.
We cannot wait. Remember to listen to the Euro Show live every match night on the official app or on Euro2020.com. You can also subscribe to the official podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows. We'll be back with our live show on Tuesday night when we'll know our first finalist, which will be one of Italy or Spain. And the podcast will shortly be released afterwards. The winner will play one of Denmark or England. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you at the Euro 2020 semi-finals.
Thanks for listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.